And so, as I say, we come to the final words of the greatest sermon ever given. And our passage this evening begins, "Therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice." Therefore, we know that an application is coming based on what has gone before. You might just want to flick back. Maybe you've not been with us since September. This sermon began back at the beginning of chapter 5. When Jesus saw the crowds, he went up on a mountainside and sat down. His disciples came to him and he began to teach them, saying. And now this evening we reach this final moment. Therefore. Everyone who hears these words, literally anybody and everybody who has ever heard these words, read this sermon, or even spent a moment considering them, is being addressed eyeball to eyeball by the Son of God. Every single one of us here tonight, and millions of others around the world, must take very seriously what is said in verses 24 to 29. You know, in some ways I'd like to bolt the doors, close the windows, and insist that no one leaves this building this evening until they have seriously considered the message of the Sermon on the Mount one more time and considered the choice that stands before them in these final verses. It won't be long before we see again on our screens pictures of Bangladesh, of homes being swept away as the Ganges and the Brahmaputra rivers burst their banks. People who have no choice where to build their home because of international economics. Very different in this country. We have a choice. I once exercised that choice and built a wooden house with woodworm. Not a very wise decision. The home I live in here in London is an interesting building. Two interesting features. Charles Dickens once lived there. Yes, it's well accounted for that he courted in our living room. Another interesting fact about our home is that it has major subsidence. And when we first moved in, it took us a while to arrange the children's bedrooms, because if we put the bed in the wrong place, the children would roll out of bed. We've got it right now, and they're taller and less bruised. Another bad decision in house building. This week I was away with our primary school, the All Souls Primary School. We were out on the west coast of Wales in Pembrokeshire. We took the children into St David's and we visited the cathedral there. I don't know if you've ever been to the cathedral in St David's, but the floor slopes very, very dramatically. As you walk in the west door, you sort of look up towards the sanctuary. A great slope, and our guide told us there were two stories as to why this slope was there. The first story, he said, was that when the cathedral was built, it was in the days when people would sometimes take their animals to church with them. And the slope was a deliberate design feature to make it easier to clean the church out afterwards. He then said the other theory was that the church, the cathedral, had been built on a swamp. Another bad building decision. And it's that theme of building that Jesus uses as he comes to the end of his sermon. He tells us a story to clarify the choice that he wants each of us to consider. He speaks of two men, each building a house for their family. Like any householder, like any head of the family, like any parents choosing somewhere to live, they want space for rest and activity, a decent-sized kitchen, an ensuite bathroom, if they're lucky. To the onlooker, these two buildings, it's difficult to tell them apart. Each house from the outside actually looks quite good. Each is a credit to its builder. At first glance, in fact, one has a slightly nicer aspect than the other because it's built right down on the beach. I love the beach, don't you? I love the sound of the waves crashing on the shore. But this house has a fatal flaw, because Jesus tells them that a storm blows up, and each of these two houses is battered by high winds and rain. And as the storm fades, One house looks windswept, but as tall as ever. Where the other one was, there's now a view of the sky and a pile of debris on the ground. Destruction has hit. You know, if we saw someone in this country today choosing to build on a swamp or on a beach without foundations, we would say they were stupid. That's the word we would use. We would say they were stupid. Jesus' word is foolish. This person is foolish. Let's just have a look. Everyone who hears these words of mine and does not put them into practice is like a foolish man who built his house on the sand. But Jesus is not talking about two fictional characters here. He's talking about you and me. Another mistake we make with this passage is to think that each of these builders was building great big houses, enormous grand mansions. Doesn't say that in the text. They may be small houses or big houses. You may be an important person or you might feel quite small. This passage is addressed to you, whoever you are. Thirdly, Jesus is not actually really talking about building houses, is he? He's talking about building our lives. And his illustration for it, he doesn't use the temporary picture of a tent that you can build and you can take up and you can move when the rain comes. Oh no, he's talking quite clearly about permanent houses, places to dwell for the rest of our lives. Jesus is making very clear that each of us have a lasting life decision to take today. As this sermon has come towards a close, choice has become increasingly apparent. Just look up chapter 7 with me, verse 13. The narrow gate or the wide gate? That's one choice that we have to make. Which will we walk through? And if you've not heard all the sermons in this series, again, you can get these out on the tape. If we work down to verse 15 onwards, we see that we can choose to be a good tree bearing good fruit in our lives or a bad tree bearing bad. And this evening we come to the wise and the foolish builder. One thing is absolutely clear in each of these illustrations, there is no middle way. You cannot choose to go through both the narrow and the wide gate in order to play safe. You cannot choose to be a good-ish tree and hope that you bear good-ish fruit. That's not an option. You're one or the other. You go through one gate or the other, you bear good fruit or you bear bad fruit. And in building your life, there is a simple choice to make. To listen to these words from the Sermon on the Mount and put them into action, or to hear them, forget them, and walk away. That second option is like the fool in Psalm 14 who says in his heart, there is no God, and chances everything, building his life on the wisdom and ideologies of this world. What was it we read in 1 Corinthians? Let me just look back through to that passage that we had read for us. For the foolishness of God is wiser than man's wisdom, and the weakness of God is stronger than man's strength. Where is the wise man? Where is the scholar? Where is the philosopher of this age? Has not God made foolish the wisdom of this world? I don't know about you, but I sometimes find myself a little paralyzed by choice. Literally overwhelmed by too many options. And I default to not acting at all. I'm not a very good clothes shopper. I'm a bit spontaneous and I'll rush out and buy something that doesn't quite fit or doesn't quite go. Because I know that if I think about it too long, I won't do anything at all. And I'll put it off and I'll be racing around on the morning of a friend's wedding trying to find a tie that looks just right. Because I keep putting off the choice. I keep leaving it till later because I'm overwhelmed by too many ties or too many shirts or too many this or too many that. If we default when we read the Sermon on the Mount, to not acting upon it, then in this passage we're told that is an option. That is something we can do. But make no mistake, Jesus calls it foolishness. So those of you this evening who are not yet following Jesus Christ have a decision to take. Upon what shall I base my life? And in what shall I put my hope? Those of you already following Jesus Christ also have a decision to take. Will I read, listen, and think myself full of Christian teaching? Or will I act upon it and build my life the Jesus way? You know, we cannot see a person's foundations, and they cannot see ours. They're deep below what we see of each other's lives. What stands before us here in this passage is a personal decision which each of us must face up to and make in the depths of our hearts. This passage tonight challenges each of us. Are we prepared to turn what we hear, what we know, and what we say into what we do? Jesus is calling each of us to a radical Christian lifestyle. Oh, we've looked over the months at the Sermon on the Mount, haven't we? In it we've found both principles for living and evidence of how we choose to live, measures of our Christian character. They're not laws for judging others. Chapter 7 and verse 1 makes that absolutely clear. Judgment is God's business. But they are questions we must ask ourselves in assessing the kind of house we are building, the kind of life we are living, the character we bear coming, and whether or not we're responding to the call to live radical Christian discipleship in the 21st century. So just for a moment, I want to recap on some of the substance of this sermon that is drawing to a close when Jesus comes to verse 24 as we've numbered it. In chapter 5, as he began this sermon, do we hunger for righteousness? Do we hunger? Hunger's a powerful word. Do we hunger for righteousness? I'm not going to go through every verse, don't worry. Do we show mercy to others? Do we show mercy to others around us? Or just a pathetic smile? Do we actively work for peace? Do we act? Are we peacemakers? That's the question that comes before us in Jesus' Sermon on the Mount. What are you doing to work for peace? He asks us to be salt and light in the world. Are we people who change this world? Do our lives affect change in the world around us? That's the question we have to ask ourselves tonight. And are we attending to our relationships? Jesus puts it quite simply, with our family, with our enemy, and with those who make us angry. Are we attending to those relationships, or are we hiding and hoping that they'll sort themselves out? We have a responsibility if we're going to live the Christian lifestyle that Christ is calling us to tonight. He goes on in what we have numbered chapter 6. Are we giving to the poor? Are we giving to the poor? Are we attending to our prayer lives? Oh, we all live far busy lives. It's all too much to find time to pray, to step aside and to come face to face before God upon our knees, or in that corner of our home that is hallowed by years of prayer. This is a hard one. Are we busy collecting earthly treasures, or do we trust in Christ that our treasure is in heaven alone? We are living in the most materialistic age that has ever been. Are we hoarding earthly treasures? Are they what we hunger for instead of righteousness, I wonder? Or is our treasure stored for us in heaven? Jesus goes on. He's not letting off. He's not giving us a way out. Are we worried and stressed, he asks, or are we learning to trust God more and more with the decisions and direction of our lives? And as we enter into chapter 7, do we find it easier to judge others than to put our own lives in order? It's been said many times that to read the Bible is a dangerous thing. And this sermon calls us to radically question our lives before Christ. James puts it like this: faith by itself, if not accompanied by action, is dead. It's as good as dead. Compare that. Here we are on St. Patrick's Day. Compare that with some words of St. Patrick, written in the 5th century. He said these words: if I am worthy, I am ready to give up my life without hesitation and most willingly for Christ's name. And give up his life he did, evangelist and bishop to the people of Ireland. A decision is required of each of us who have heard or read or contemplated the Sermon of the Mount. You know, I'm reminded of Moses facing Israel in Deuteronomy 30. These are the words that we find there. This day I call heaven and earth as witnesses that I have set before you life and death, blessings and curse. Now choose life, so that you and your children may live, and that you may love the Lord your God. Listen to his voice and hold fast to him, for the Lord is your life. To let go of him is your destruction, in other words. When Jesus had finished saying these things, I'm looking for a moment here at verse 28 and 29. The crowds were amazed at his teaching because he taught as one who had authority and not as their teachers of the law. You want to take a few moments as we come to the end of this fantastic Sermon on the Mount to ask ourselves, who is it that preaches this greatest sermon that was ever given? Actually, it's none other than the Lord of heaven and earth. And the crowds were amazed at his teaching, because he had authority. Now, of course, there were many teachers around at that time, and Jesus presents as one of those teachers, but there were differences. He was a Jew, but he didn't teach like a Jew. He wasn't bound by his culture. His words had universal application and impact. His words weren't either just a commentary on the scriptures of Judaism, but he claimed absolute truth. Now, the prophets, we know from our scriptures, regularly introduce their words, "Thus says the Lord." Jesus Christ doesn't use that as an introduction. Rather, he says, "I tell you the truth." Such is the authority of the Son of God. 5 times in the Sermon on the Mount, he uses those words. No wonder the crowds were amazed. No wonder he stood head and shoulders above all of the other teachers that they had ever heard. In chapter 5 and in verse 18, if we could just turn back there for a moment. "I tell you the truth, until heaven and earth disappear, not the smallest letter nor the least stroke of a pen will by any means disappear from the law until everything is accomplished. Anyone who breaks one of the least of these commandments and teaches others to do the same will be called least in the kingdom of heaven. But whoever practices and teaches these commands will be called great in the kingdom of heaven. For I tell you that unless your righteousness surpasses that of the Pharisees and the teachers of the law, you will certainly not enter the kingdom of heaven." Not only has Jesus the authority to speak the truth, but he is also the king of the kingdom of heaven. Altogether, during the Sermon of the Mount, he speaks of the kingdom of heaven 6 times. And on each occasion, he is proclaiming gently but with firm and clear authority that it is he who will decide who enters and where they will sit when they come to the time of judgment, to the greatest storm that any of us will ever face. He speaks truth with authority, with the authority of him who will judge us on the principles of the kingdom of heaven, into which each of us dare and yet desire to tread. Finally, we must consider Jesus the rock. Jesus, the one who had authority as the Son of God, Jesus the King of the kingdom, and Jesus the rock upon which we are to build our lives. This whole passage, this whole familiar story of these two builders comes down to, what are you building your life upon? Jesus doesn't actually declare that he is the rock. In actual fact, he points to Peter as the rock upon which he will build his church. But Jesus himself would have known the scriptures. He would have known Samuel and Isaiah and Daniel. And he would have known the Psalms, Psalms 18 and 62. Let's just turn for a moment to Psalm 62, if we could do that, please. Verses 1 and 2, my soul finds rest in God alone. My salvation comes from him. He alone is my rock and my salvation. He is my fortress. I shall never be shaken. And again in verse 6, he alone is my rock and my salvation. He is my fortress. I shall not be shaken. My salvation and my honor depend on God. He is my mighty rock, my refuge. Jesus knew that in due time the early church would see that he himself was the rock upon which we are to build our lives. So therefore this evening we are challenged. We are challenged to build our lives upon the teachings of Jesus Christ as they have been entrusted through Peter to the church. We find our place within the communion of the church, our foundations deep and established upon Jesus Christ himself. We began, didn't we, in verse 24, therefore everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice, these words of mine. If we go to the doctor, I hate going to the doctor, actually, and I hate even more going to the dentist. In fact, going to the dentist is probably the worst experience I have. And I went just recently, and I hadn't been for about 13, 14 months, and they told me off, because these days it's every six, I think, isn't it? And anyway, went to the dentist, and they've given me advice on how to clean my teeth. They seem to change the advice on how to clean your teeth every 10 years, which I find quite complicated, because as I get older, you have to keep changing, don't you? Now, if I go to the dentist or to the doctor and I ignore their advice, I'm being rather foolish. If we go to the Son of God, the King of the kingdom, the rock of our salvation, and we choose to ignore his words, then we do so at our peril. Because all of us will face storms in this life, and then we shall face the final storm. And so, to draw to a close this evening, let me summarize. C.S. Lewis once said, there used to be a relationship between truth and action. And that's exactly what Christ is looking for here as he draws this fantastic Sermon on the Mount to a close. He tells this wonderful little story of these two men. Two men who must have reached out when they heard the thunder crack. As the raindrops began to fall upon their roofs, they were suddenly thrown onto that which gives security when faced with questions and doubts. What gives us our security? Because one of them discovered his house, his very life, was built of straw. His house couldn't protect him from the storms. And I think of houses ripped apart by unexpected hurricanes, of house fires wrecking people's dreams, and more personally, the storms of personal crisis which leave us overwhelmed and ruined. The other man learnt that the trials and temptations of this life, if faced with Jesus Christ as our foundation, will further shape our Christian character rather than destroying our humanity. And I want to turn to Luke's account of this same story. Luke chapter 6 and verse 48. I think he says it a little bit more graphically. I will show you what he is like who comes to me and hears my words and puts them into practice. He is like a man building a house who dug down deep and laid the foundation on rock. When the flood came, the torrent struck that house, but could not shake it because it was well built. So, my friends, a simple choice faces you and me this evening: to choose life or to face destruction. To turn often and regularly to the words of the Sermon on the Mount and to ask ourselves those painful, challenging questions that will help us build lives upon Christ, the giver of life. Or to walk out of here tonight like the fool who says in his heart there is no God. Like the foolish who have glimpsed God in Christ and yet ignore his words and build shallow Christian lives trapped within a mental box rather than living out the freedom of radical discipleship.